reason why this is a good story is because this is an anomaly. This is the story with the happy ending. This is a story that never happens. Early Saturday morning on Christmas Day, we got a message back from the threat actor that just said, Merry Christmas. We will give you the decryptor tool, but promise us that you'll teach your children good cybersecurity. And that's no lie. They gave us a link and the decryptor tool was available. You don't want to be figuring out who you call during a live incident. You want to figure out who you call before the incident and have it written down somewhere on hard paper, not on a computer, just in case your stuff gets encrypted. What do we do in that situation? Who do we call first? Who do we call second?
This is the Cyber Crime Lab, a podcast about true cybercrime stories, the impact on victims, and what businesses can do to protect themselves and their customers. And if you think you're not at risk, that is exactly where attackers want you to be.
In my experience, it only takes hearing what these attacks are like a few times to realize you need to prepare yourself for what could be a business-ending experience.
That's Andy Anderson, the founder and CEO of DataStream Insurance. For over a decade, Andy has been working with victims of cybercrime. He's seen firsthand the human impact of a cyber attack. Now, he's on a mission to shed light on the threats we all face from a world we can't see.
I know you work a lot of breach cases that involve ransomware. There's one particular story that I really want to hear about a school and kind of what that was like. And you do a lot of school work, but why don't we just dive into that story and start hearing what that was like and how it relates to other cases that you've worked.
So, Andy, we do have the opportunity, then the fortune, to represent a lot of municipalities and public entities and school districts or schools, and including K through 12 and community colleges. And we've dealt with a number of unique issues that arise when dealing with student data and with the interplay between the varied technologies and digital systems that are at issue in a school or a school district. And so when there is a ransomware attack in a school district, there are a lot of competing interests that are going on all at the same time they have to address. And it is a very complicated incident response because it involves many different kinds of stakeholders. If you take a particular, like a merchant that experiences a ransomware, you know, the merchant has some systems, it goes down, there's maybe some consumers that are affected, the employees are affected, and that's it. But when you're dealing with the school district, there was this very delicate relationship that as outside counsel, we get married into on a case-by-case basis. We have to learn who the superintendent is and what the relationship is between the superintendent and the school principals and the teachers and the parents and the students and how the data that is at issue works in those competing systems. And so there's a lot at issue when it comes to security and cybersecurity and the school district. And in the case that there's always security questions that have to be put up first, life safety issues. So for example, we once had one where 911 was down for a municipality, and that is a public safety issue. So that has to take primacy over other possible considerations. And in this particular case, in the case of the school safety, one of the impacts of the ransomware attack was on the school closed circuit camera system. We were in a position where it's after hours in an incident response, a phone conference with the DFIR firm and the major principals from the school district, the cyber insurer, and other stakeholders. And this issue of cameras came up, and the superintendent just said, listen, we cannot have school if the cameras are not working. I'm not going to address the parents and tell them that their kids are in school and we don't have the ability to see what's going on. So that took, in this particular superintendent's perspective, absolute primacy. And as a result, we found ourselves canceling school for the next day till we got our arms around the security.
It's a theme that we constantly hit upon, which is you don't realize how reliant on technology and in sort of ways that you maybe didn't fully appreciate until you are faced with the fact that technology isn't working, that it's gotten its tentacles into every facet of our daily lives. And it's quite literally, for this closed circuit TV, it's in the background.
Let me stay with the case of a school district for a minute, because you're asking about the use of technology and reliance of technology. The answer is clearly yes. And we do have a huge reliance on technology. In the case of schools, they have student data that's usually hosted on some, in this district's case, very fortunately for them, was hosted on an offsite cloud, a service through some sort of ed techware application. And so it was not affected by the ransomware, which was very lucky for this school district, but we find that's common. But it's also ultimately, what is it that they're teaching. That's still a service. That's still a professional service. It's a high skill professional service, but we help this superintendent and the different principals of the schools craft talking points for them to convey to their teachers, which, among other things, try to build morale amongst the staff and to try to convince them you don't need computers to be productive. You don't need computers to teach the children. You can take out the ruler and the compass and the, you know, dust off the old books and teach. And that we created talking points to try to encourage them to get back to basics and at the same time build morale around the school district as it was dealing with the incident response.
Stu reminds us that while we do have a tendency to rely heavily on technology, don't be afraid to get back to basics. If you find yourself victim of a ransomware attack, you need to get it taken care of by someone like Stu. However, that doesn't mean that your world needs to come to a screeching halt. In the case of this school district, teachers needed to hear that they could still go on teaching.
So walk me the day that you get this call, and what time of year is it? Take us to that moment where you're picking up the phone.
It's a good story, and I'm doing my best to change the names to protect the innocent, etc. And the reason why this is a good story is because this is an anomaly. This is the story with the happy ending. This is a story that never happens. So it's so rare, and the singular time that anything like this has ever happened to us in a ransomware situation. And the DFIR firm that we were consulting with in that firm has a high volume of this type of work. And they too were very surprised with the way that this all worked out.
For those who don't know, DFIR stands for Digital Forensics and Incident Response. In other words, those are the people you want to call in if you ever experience a cyber attack. Stu's law firm often consults with these types of firms.
It's going to this, and again, you're dealing with the school district, and if I could paint the picture, it's in a somewhat rural area. It's Christmas time. So it's December, snow's on the ground. We got the Christmas break coming up. The kids are anxious to finish their semester or their marking period or whatever to start celebrating the holidays. And it's getting really close. There's a ransomware attack, and it's like the week before Christmas. And it's tough. It's really tough. And we immediately went into our messaging with the threat actor as, listen, among other things, just so you guys know, you hit a K-12 school district. Just so you know, there are teachers and school kids at Christmas with it not learning right now because of you. So when you go into these negotiations and these extortionary demands, think about that when you tell us your demands.
That's the vein that you start with, right?
It's Christmas. We hit them early with the guilt. And our business partners know this. Our clients know this is our philosophy. And when it comes to ransomware incident response, we do believe that if you spend a little extra effort in communicating with the threat actors, you do get a little bit better results. And that's not in every case, and certainly not a guarantee. And I'm not a fool. There's certainly not predictability a lot of times in this game because of the criminal nature of our adversaries. But in this case, we just figured we're going to lay it on thick. And so we did, from our very earliest communication. And it began like every other communication. We got an extortion demand. It was high. In this one, we just laid it on thick. It's Christmas and you hit a school. And K-12, by the way, so these are small children. And it started off normal. We did what we always do. We secured the environment and we started to play for more time. And we started to try to come up, we said, we have to come up with money, but how can we come up with money? Because we're about to go into Christmas break and everyone's off. this is administration is part-time. We don't have money on hand. We don't have a magic money tree that we can't just go to and pick money off of. Everything takes appropriations, and then that takes committees, and you have to have a quorum. And we were really trying to lay it on thick with our explanations as to why we don't have any money to give the threat actor. And this past Christmas, if I'm not mistaken, Christmas Eve was on a Friday and Christmas Day was on a Saturday. And we left business day, Christmas Eve.
You were stalling for time because then you could basically cancel school. You cancel because you end up canceling school for a day or two.
Right. So typical anti-incident response strategy, I don't think these are spilling anybody's secrets here, is you have to secure the environment first before you rebuild or do anything, because the worst thing in the world would be for you to rebuild your environment and then get re-extorted or re-infected because you didn't secure your environment in the first place and all you did is restore a vulnerable environment. You don't want to do that. So our first order of business is always security, and sometimes that takes time, particularly in sophisticated networks with hybrid environments where you have on-premises servers and you also have cloud servers and you have insourced IT and outsourced IT and you have all these things going on at the same time. So we're buying for time, and that is a typical strategy with ransomware incident response. And also because we understand that a typical strategy for threat actors is to push for less time. They want you to move quickly. They try to create pressurized environment by doing things to aggravate you. For example, they'll call your staff and make harassing phone calls, or they'll send emails to your help desk to try to keep them really busy all day long. Or they'll, if they have a customer list, they may call one of your customers or send an email to one of your customers and say, but did you know that we hit this firm that you're doing business with over here? So we've seen all of those types of actions that threat actors will take to create pressurized environment to get you to try to compel you to pay quickly.
When it comes to a cyber attack, time is of the essence in more ways than one. In this case, not only was Stu racing against the Christmas clock, but he was also working towards buying more time from the attackers. If you're not careful, threat actors will use time against you.
So we try to resist those and build time to get our security in play, to make sure our folks have a project plan to rebuild their environment in a secure way, in a safe way, and to get legal compliance underway, et cetera. So all of these things going on contemporaneously, a lot of moving parts. One of the strategies was, if we can buy ourselves to Christmas break, the kids will go out of school and our IT teams will have a lot more flexibility and time to really secure the environment and rebuild and get in there, really plan for the future. So it was so close to Christmas that the superintendent just canceled school. Obviously, none of the children were upset. I know a lot of the teachers were not upset either.
Cyber attack day.
Right. But it also allowed us to secure the environment with a lot of certitude. And we're continuing to communicate with the threat actor because we did at that point need the decryptor tool to get at some critical, what I'll call, business data.
A decryptor tool is essential to reversing a cyber attack. And more often than not, the threat actors are the only ones who will be able to provide you with it. Leveraging this tool to make demands, it is the lock they keep on your data.
Almost always you're like, this is hitting the local paper or whatever. Like, everybody knows this is going on.
So because it was a school district, there's parents involved and teachers involved, there are no secrets. There really are no secrets. And so we did have a leadership circle of trust team that was the IR team, essentially, to manage decision making. But the superintendent reported to the parents, to the teachers quite regularly. And so, yes, it made it into social media, Facebook, Twitter. They had a big Twitter feed. So there was other more local media, the local newspapers, et cetera. So it was out. Now, once it goes out, by the way, the threat actor loses a lot of leverage as a typical rule, because one of the things that they're holding over the client's head is usually the secrecy of it all, to say, look, do you want this out there? Because we're going to go breach all your stuff. And then one of the things that the client pays for, if the client pays at all, is for silence, is for proof of deleting the data or the return of the data, the stolen data, et cetera. So that's always in the backdrop. In this instance, though, there was no secrets. Again, it was covered in the media. Then on going into Christmas Eve, we had all of this at play. We essentially were going to work through the weekend, get our security up and running. And we kept sending out these messages to the threat actor saying, look, we don't have money. We're not going to have money at least until January because it's Christmas. So all the money people are gone. So you're going to have to give us time anyway. We've already told everyone, so there's no need for you. You can breach our data if you want. We don't think it's going to do any good for you because we've already told everybody, so we're not too worried about it. You know, we still need your decryptor tool. And we lay it on thick about the teachers. And we even went so far, I swear one of the messages was, don't one of you have some fond memory of a kind teacher that touched your heart when you were a child? We laid it on thick, man. We all went, celebrated our Christmas Eves, and early Saturday morning on Christmas Day, we got a message back from the threat actor that just said, Merry Christmas, we will give you the decryptor tool, but promise us that you'll teach your children good cybersecurity. And that's no lie. They gave us a link and the decryptor tool was available. We quickly thanked them and tested it in our consultant's laboratory and confirmed that it worked and it was safe. And we quickly availed ourselves of this gift that we got, and we started calling the case the Christmas Miracle. It's an amazing story. It's true, and it never happens. And that's why we call it the miracle, because that never happens. We've had numerous school districts, dozen school districts, only time that anything like that. We lay it on thick every time. They don't care. They never care. But we got them. We got them good on Christmas.
Even criminals remember that teacher, right? Maybe the one who taught them how to use a computer.
We got somebody there. That's a rare situation that never happens. We call it a miracle because it was, but it's a great story. And I thought I'd share it on your podcast.
If your strategy is to pray for a miracle, right? I think you're
not a good strategy.
And indeed, it was a Christmas miracle. Thanks to the persistence of Stu and his negotiation team, the threat actors decided to hand over the decryptor tool in exchange for nothing. As Stu has mentioned several times, this nearly never happens. Thankfully, for this one school district, it did.
Love that story. Obviously, a happy ending is always nice, but you appreciate all the sort of moving parts that go on with a school.
These are tough, man, across the board. When ransomware threat actors hit a public entity, the attackers, in all sincerity, I don't think the attackers realize the sophistication, the complexity of the public entity, the relationship between the governing body and the administrators, the ones that actually do the work of the town or the county or whatever the case may be. There are public officials that are elected that have to answer to constituents. Then are the non-elected people have to answer to the elected people. There are votes. There are what are called sunshine laws, which are essentially anti-corruption laws that are get passed so that the work of the state can never be held in secrecy. Our whole incident response strategy is based in secrecy. So we have to adapt to the law and we have to make sure that we're not violating any anti-corruption laws, or they call them sunshine laws because they're supposed to shine light into the workings of local government, which is a great virtuous objective, of course. But with respect to incident response, it doesn't work well with our typical strategy. So we have to find ways to make sure that we're sensitive to those laws. So public entities are tough and schools are just one version of the public entity, but it's a good case study because it has unique data, which is student data. Student data has a lot of sensitivity to it. First, there's a federal law protecting student data, FERPA. Also, student data often consists of other personally identifiable data. And so there's multiple sort of kinds of sensitivities. And then it's not just the student data. Think about a school is also an employer. So the teachers are employees. There are performance reviews. There's compensation records. There's business data of the school that's also at issue when it comes to protecting sensitive data. A lot of these nuances, I think, don't go recognized a lot when you hear about in the public news media about a ransomware story happening to a town, a city, or a school.
It can't be said enough. Protecting your sensitive data can make or break your business. More than you may realize can be considered sensitive data. No matter the industry, in the long run, it's better to protect everything than simply cherry-picking a few pieces of your data to protect.
we keep hitting on a couple of the same themes as we do these conversations, right? Like one, plan for practice, think about these issues long before that you're having them, because that's going to serve you well, even if they don't play out. The other is, if they do happen, this isn't a place where you want to be. I'm sure the 100th one that you're doing looks a little different than the first one that you did, and all the lessons that you've learned over that, right?
The respectful way of saying that is, we humbly suggest no one dabbles in this.
Yeah, not a time for you to be like a DIY incident response effort, right?
We have to be sensitive to people's budgets too, to our organization clients' budgets. If there's no insurance, or if the insurance is limited, if there's under insurance, we have to consider all of that. And in any sort of cyber event, ransomware or any sort of cyber event, is this always, I always view this sort of continuity, this horizontal line of, you have security on the one side and you have privacy on the other side. And you may start here, but you learn things during the investigation where it slides on over and it touches upon data privacy concerns. And then that's when typically there are more affirmative legal obligations that you might have to comply with. And ransomware usually hits on both security and any threat of exfiltration, which is theft of data. You immediately find yourself into the data privacy side. It is very challenging, the ransomware sort of makeup today. Your earlier observation about being prepared is really the best advice to give. It's conventional wisdom, but it's conventional wisdom for a reason. You don't want to be figuring out who you call during a live incident. You want to figure out who you call before the incident and have it written down somewhere on hard paper, not on a computer, just in case your stuff gets encrypted. You should have a list of all your resources, your IT resources, a basic strategy about who's going to be in the room when decisions need to get made.
As the saying goes, by failing to prepare, you are only preparing to fail. Get your incident response plan in order before you ever come under attack. And remember to write it down in paper in case you get completely locked out of your computer. Stu has a few more pieces of wisdom to share, and we would advise that you listen very carefully.
You know, we call this an incident response plan. I always say it sounds more complicated than it is. Sometimes it really, you just need to put your thoughts on paper about what you're going to do in a situation. We work with clients in advance of claims, before there's incidents, to help them create and test out their incident response plans. That's the best use of your time before an incident happens. Get your leaders in a room, dedicate 2 hours or 3 hours, and think through, what do we do if somebody from the finance office sends a check to the wrong place because they received a fraudulent email? What do we do in that situation? Who do we call first? Who do we call second? What data do we preserve? Ask those questions of yourselves now before there's an event, and you'll find that if and when there is an event, you'll be way better prepared to go through it efficiently, with sensitivity. You'll be doing your cyber insurer a heck of a favor. They're going to like you. So it really does just lead to a better result. So if anyone listening to this podcast has any sort of takeaways with all our war stories and all that, it's be prepared as best as possible. So that way, if an event happens, you'll know what to do or who to call.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. And I think you can't, having sat on the sidelines of a lot of these events and seen what's gone on, hard to overstate the emotional kind of challenges that happen during the very hard to make rational decisions and to think clearly when you're in the middle of one of these. Using the time and the perspective that you have of what you might do and using that as a guide certainly seems just like football coaches plan out there. They got a strategy for every contingency right in a game.
When that comes up, you just go to the playbook and figure out where it is and pull up that play, and that's the one that we run with. And I'm not a sports guy, so I hope I'm doing okay with your metaphor. That is exactly what we would urge our folks to do from an IT perspective. There's different kinds of clients with very significant IT departments that have great resources, that have security operations centers, et cetera. You really should run through those scenarios and come up with a playbook for what happens. Server A goes down, server B goes down, and we get really granular. But if you're more of a low footprint type of IT department, you have one or two human resources in there, and you outsource most of your IT operations to third parties, to managed service providers, security folks or whatever, virtual CISOs and the like, then in that case, the plan is the most important because you don't know 100% what's going on with your vendor.
Another way you can prepare yourself for a cyber attack is to make sure that you manage your vendors properly, as well as invest in cyber insurance. You'll hear in a minute that Stu often works with clients who do everything right, but their vendors didn't. Be intentional about who you work with and make sure they are also doing things to protect themselves against a threat actor. Cyber insurance is another way that you can minimize the risk.
Vendor management really seems to be the recurring theme of 2022, if I really had to pick one so far with one quarter in. So many of our matters this year seem to be where our client was doing everything right, but one of the vendors did not do everything right, and it affected one of my clients. And maybe the thing that my client ended up not doing right was managing the vendor and knowing and understanding the vulnerabilities, having a vendor connected to your system the way that this vendor was, or having a contract that is completely silent on security. In this day and age, in 2022, if I was neon flashing lights out of this podcast, it would be vendor management. Who are your vendors? What does your agreement say about who's in charge of security and what are their obligations for security? Do they say anything? If not, maybe they should. If they do, what do they say? And who's, let make sure you understand what you signed up for. So manage your vendors. And that would also be a great, I think, good takeaway from this podcast.
Yeah, no, it's where we started the third party and thinking about you're outsourcing some of these things. Obviously the legal documents, but to put my insurance hat on, a good policy is going to actually cover you for some of that sort of stuff.
There is no greater vehicle to outsource cyber risk than cyber insurance. I mean, that's just the way it is. We have a couple of very large clients that may, because they're self-insured to a very large amount. And so maybe we didn't really tap into the cyber insurance because the self-insurance was so high. Those are some situations that are unique. But for the small and mid-size clients of ours, there's not a single one that did not benefit from having cyber insurance. You know, unless there was some sort of coverage issue, of course, which I couldn't get into, but presuming all the coverages were there, cyber insurance is the best vehicle to outsource cyber risk.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Stu. I will buy you many drinks later, wherever I need to. I didn't realize, because I came out of the cybersecurity side of the house, how just incredibly the coverage was, like what you could get. It still blows me away what you can do. And that people don't buy this is
one of the most underutilized area of the cyber coverage, I think, and in incident response in general, underappreciated aspects of incident response is communications, crisis communications. So important. We work either, we'll call it the self-help, meaning that our client has a marketing team or an internal public relations team that they can put together the right communications. And then at Fisher Broyles, we'll just give them the guidance about the things to say or not to say. Or we also utilize, and it's usually through cyber insurance approval, crisis communications consultants that specialize in data privacy or cybersecurity events, including but not limited to ransomware, where they will tell you exactly what to say. They'll develop a playbook for you, including standby media statements, social media strategies, social media monitoring, a great use of cyber insurance resources coverage or your own dollars and cents to get ahead of messaging. Messaging is so important, first to your internal stakeholders, like your employees or your investors or your in the relationship between management and a board of directors, for example. So you get into those things, and a crisis communications consultant could be of such great value in helping explain some of this stuff. And then your external stakeholders, your consumers, the media, social media, all the outside folks that get involved. If you have one of these hacker situations where there's some gray hat or white hat pen tester or researcher that finds a vulnerability and they start giving you a hard time about it. Anyway, my point being is that good communications is an underappreciated aspect of incident response, and I believe that, and I just want to emphasize that for your audience.
I think that's a great point, which we haven't touched upon quite as much. In some ways, it's not if, but when one of these incidents is going to happen. Planning for it obviously really helps, but also in the words of the insurance world, it's frequency and severity. How often it's going to happen and then how bad it is. Another theme that we often just, you know, kind of trying to beat the drum on is that the ability to impact that severity is significant. You can do a lot of things to make a little incident a lot worse, and you can do the other things to help an incident that could be really bad to contain it. From the legal perspective, from the technology perspective, from the communications perspective, getting good help early, getting the right people thinking about it beforehand, all those help. And probably not the most obvious as you think about these. They're like, oh, we want to fix the tech stuff.
That is 100% correct. When we meet our clients, they're usually only thinking about the tech stuff. We bring up these other issues. When you hit them with the other external stakeholders, what about your consumers? Especially when it's B2B, when it's a business-to-business relationship, and you ask them that question, I'm like, do you have maybe a contract that says, in the case of ransomware, you got to tell us about it? Because we've seen those contracts. We have a lot of those where, oh my God, you know what? I'll give you a perfect example. It's just the type of work I don't know why, but we've represented a lot of law firms that get experienced ransomware. Law firms are challenging client. First of all, there's ethical obligations through the ABA guidelines that are very relevant. Also with the personalities and just the, they're a tough client. We had a law firm that had a very large retailer as a client. And the very large retailer made the law firm sign its engagement letter, not the law firm's engagement letter. And in the very large retailer's engagement letter, there was a provision that said security. And underneath that provision, it said, in the event of a security event, including but not limited to ransomware, comma, you need to give us immediate notification by calling this toll-free number and leaving a message. And someone from our security operations team will call you back. So when an agreement, a commercial contract, is that express? Is that prescriptive? The advice is to follow the prescription. Leave a message and see what happens. You have to comply when it's your client, when it's your client's consumer or your client's client. In addition to your legal efforts to comply, you also want to preserve that business relationship. And so you have to act accordingly and in sensitivity to that business relationship. And in the case of that, where it was like giant retailer, you had to comply. It was very clear.
There's so many times that we talked with folks and they think, oh, I'm too small. Nobody cares about me. I'm not that big. How bad could an incident be? And then you just start having these widening their horizons and changing their perspective.
And the threat actors are wrong all the time. That's another thing that we should point out. They get it wrong. Look, they think they know Western businesses, but many of them are not from the West. And so they make great assumptions about the way our economy works or the way business works. A great example is we had a threat actor that attacked a client of ours that had offices in the United States and in India. And they had stolen financial records from our client, including financial records that were depicted in Indian currency, which has an exchange rate, which makes the numbers much larger than in dealing with US dollars. And so before we could get into any kind of realistic negotiate, they were asking us for crazy amounts of money. And we didn't understand, like, why do you think we have so much money? Like, you're so wrong about us. And they kept saying, we've seen your records. And then they showed up. We asked them, can you please send us what you're talking about? And they showed us. And we said, that's Indian. That's not US. And you have to convert the amounts to US, to the conversion rate. Educating the threat actor. And I don't mean to be even cute about this, but it's part of our job in the incident response world is to educate the threat actor about what it is that they've stolen or who it is that they've attacked, if it matters. And sometimes it doesn't matter, obviously, but if it matters, like, for example, why we don't have the money you think we do. If we can't get blood from a stone, Mr. Threat Actor or Ms. Threat Actor, and we don't have the money, so now what?
The art of negotiation is a key part of what Stu does. He and his team know how to handle threat actors because they are trained professionals. The example he gives is just one type of cyber attack from one threat actor. Stu knows how to pivot and change the dialogue when needed. And that skill is exactly one of the reasons why it's worth working with a DFIR firm like Fisher Broyles.
We always get the script at the end of our assignments where you can see the entire communication with the threat actor. Sometimes it's yes, you do, no, we don't. Yes, you do, no, we don't. At some point, someone's going to blink on a number, or either we come up with more money or they reduce their expectations.
Stu, this is awesome. Always enjoy chatting with you. Thank you again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Cyber Crime Lab, brought to you by DataStream Insurance. When the worst happens, you're going to want the best financial, legal, and technical support to get you back up and running again. With cyber insurance from DataStream, we find the most comprehensive insurance coverage on the market alongside critical post-incident customer support. Go to datastreaminsurance.com today and see how we can help you secure your business data. That's datastreaminsurance.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe and give us a 5-star review. You'll find show notes and any resources mentioned at cybercrimelabpodcast.com. We hope you'll join us next episode. Until then, stay safe. More importantly, stay ready.